Good. All right. If I may, Chair,
Yes, go ahead.
Welcome, Board. This is a Board of County Commissioners planning session. This is our first attempt at trying this. This is a chance for you to meet commissioners on a monthly basis, to have a strategic discussion with the appropriate staff present, to discuss really any topic you wish, to strategize with staff, to think, brainstorm, plan. It was more open-ended, less structured. It is being recorded, but audio only. It is on Zoom and being recorded, but only audio, so there's no video for this. Ideally, you will not make major decisions, but you'll give guidance to staff on things you want to come forward that we bring formally back to you at a policy session or a business meeting. But that's the intent of these meetings. Staff has prepared an agenda for your consideration today that I believe you've all reviewed in advance. You don't have to follow it if you don't want. This is your time together. We have 2 hours today, and it could go longer or shorter depending on your desire, but that's our schedule for today. What we had planned in advance is we have a quick activity to start, and it is a working lunch, so if any of you are not done yet, feel free to eat your lunch. A quick exercise to start, then we'll talk about your strategic plan, continue the conversation. If you would like to follow my recommendation of narrowing it down to two or three items and or go back to the retreat items you discussed. Next, to talk about housing and homelessness, in particular, the items Chair Smith mentioned last week of things for the county to focus on, community summits, a blue ribbon committee, and an advisory vote on the repeal of Measure 110. And in addition, Commissioner West, you had brought forward a potential resolution for the board to consider, and we'll discuss this at this time as well. We have our health, housing, and human services staff present that will give you a quick update on the programs and services they do to tee up your conversations about the summits and the resolution and the blue ribbon committee. And that is what staff is proposing. But with that, you can throw the whole thing out if you wish and talk about anything else you wish. But this was our proposal coming into the meeting today. So, Chair, it's your meeting to run. You're happy to follow the agenda, or if you'd like to change the agenda, whatever you prefer.
Well, this came out of the discussion that we had during our goal session planning for 2 days. And I thought it was a really good discussion. I thought it was so fruitful because, number one, we were not sitting at the dais with cameras on us. And when you're in an atmosphere like this, I think it's easier to have more frank and honest conversations. And the three items that I put on here, based on the op-ed I wrote, reflects what I thought that I heard at that meeting. Now, we don't have to just limit it to that, although I think those are very important, that we continue on with those at some level. I'm open to a discussion on what we want to do with this, commissioners. This is not prescriptive. I just ask that everybody, you know, be respectful of others' opinions, that we're able to talk openly. And staff is here for a reason. Staff is here to give us factual information as questions arise to help us work through these issues. Okay. Paul, do you have a hand up?
Yeah, I do. So I'm fine to go along with a narrower discussion considering there's only a couple hours here. So I'm okay with that. But I do want to say that with the change of how we operated prior chair with the previous chairs, we had, I thought, pretty well organized for the most part, work sessions with materials, educational pieces. We were able to hear our professional staff make presentations and subject matters where we don't have expertise, right? I like what one thing that John Ludlow had said, Chair Ludlow had said, is we're not experts, we're lay people. Mm-hmm. And we rely upon our professional staff to, guide us and educate us. So with that in mind, I think what's been lost for me in the last couple of years with really abbreviated or lack of work sessions. I mean, we had about several, four or five a day on Tuesdays and sometimes into Wednesdays. We haven't, number one, Commissioner West and Commissioner Scholl have not been able to enjoy that level of education interaction with our staff to see, really, I think the high level, good quality people we have here, and their knowledge base. So I appreciate our staff being here, and I hope they have an opportunity to play more of a role to educate us. I know Commissioner West, his background and his education, But I also know that, and he and I have talked about this, you know, he's not a mental health professional and certified as one. Neither of us are. When it comes to drug addictions and detoxing, maybe Commissioner West has a little bit of experience with seeing the outcomes in ER or something like that, perhaps. But I just think that we need to be more versed than we are, and listening a little bit more and getting a broad spectrum of education from different folks on these matters, because I think that we sometimes it kind of concerns me when we're speaking as though we're experts when we're really not. But I think we learn and we glean a lot. I just want to just put that out there, you know, and that concludes my thoughts.
Anything else?
Or at this moment.
Chair, thank you for putting this together. I think that's an important meeting that we're having. I came, you know, I like the format at which we're able to kind of free flow a little bit with, as we all have different passions and ideas in which we're stronger than in others. The staff brings a lot to the table here too. And a couple things that I hope, at least as I look at the agenda and the schedules which we're talking about, is I have some of you guys have already talked to me offline. I know Chair Smith, we talked about some of this and Chair Sava separately. I mean, Commissioner Sava separately, is just three different ideas about how to quickly continue to be innovative in ways to get housing up and going for people that need it, despite the hotel, as we move on, right, and move forward and being solutions oriented. We still have problems to solve locally, even if it doesn't involve a hotel. And so I have three kind of ideas. They may not stick, but I think they're innovative policies, ideas that we can chew on a little bit. I'd like to share with you guys. And my staff took a picture. I was so concerned that I came over the weekend and spent Saturday in my office kind of getting back to the basics about, like, what am I asking of the staff and what am I asking of my fellow colleagues? And when I got through nursing school, we do what's called patho maps. We'd have somebody, a patient with a problem, it would be a disease process, and we would just map out the disease process to recovery and care and treatment. We just take over a whiteboard. I still have a ton of pictures of my whiteboards as a nursing student. So Kimberly popped this onto my desk today, and she's like, you might want to share this with people in the meeting today. Some of you guys may have already popped into my office. This is one of my whiteboard moments to help me process the solution we're all trying to solve. Why? I'll just give it to you. I don't know how many I have, but I'll give you the whiteboard that I have right now. I'll give it to, I don't know, which part of your staff. Just to share it. Gary, I have one here too. But just trying to be solutions oriented and systems of care and things like that. We can talk about that too. But and then I give you guys an update on that resolution. I think there's up to 8 cities looking at passing it right now in the Clackamas County, including Gresham. And so we can talk about that too. But that's kind of my thoughts about today and the agenda. That's my trying to move forward whiteboard that I did in my office. It talks about, like, what's the big question? What is a recovery plan? What's our continuum of care look like? I put those into boxes in order, what that continuum of care looks like, what the overall goal is, essential principles as we move forward in these models, and what we look for with partners we work with. And recovery capital is what we're helping people build in their own lives so they can be resilient as individuals and self-sufficient. That's what recovery capital is about. What are they building through the recovery process? And that could be, and it doesn't necessarily always have to be about addiction. There could be a number of things that they need to rebuild and become resilient as people we serve in our community. But yeah, I guess that's kind of my thoughts about what's going on. I think we have a big opportunity to build something pretty cool here as a team as we move forward with this new board.
Martha. I think this is fantastic. I wish you would teach me how to do this. I think we should have gone to
nursing school.
Nursing school, yeah.
Study habits you developed with a bunch of cohorts in the library.
I know my parents.
Too many kids.
My parents told me don't do it, but that's okay. What I really like is the Clackamas Recovers kind of notion. That's that's really kind of a, that can take us places, I think. And when you're talking of a continuum of care, you give the specifics here of what that would mean. And I guess what I would ask our staff is, we have this list here. So I'm assuming that some of what, but not all of what you have here fits into this list.
How
do we integrate those?
Yeah, it could be super similar. And then we could see if there's gaps along where we would like to see those gaps filled.
Okay.
You know, and then we start asking, yeah, and so I was patho mapping recovery and housing in Clackamas County, and that was just a process for me that I just would work through. And there, I can see other whiteboards in my mind that grow on this topic alone, but I only have so much space in my office. I could have come in here with a bigger whiteboard, but yeah.
Sure. If we're not going to do that, I'd love to put just stuff up on the whiteboard just to quickly. But so if I peel those off the whiteboard, because I don't think we're going to be going down that path today.
Yes, let's do that.
I don't know what that is.
I don't either.
Yeah. So this was a prioritization exercise a couple weeks ago. You brought up the commissioners narrowing down the board's goals from 7 to about 3. This would have to be focused on that. That's all that you want to
So why don't we start with item 3 and 4 on the agenda, and we'll finish the meeting with the strategic plan. So split the agendas.
Okay.
Sorry, Kimberly. We'll come back to that.
Okay, so I'll just outline what I'll just say what I'm going to kind of put up here. I like your model. I think it does fit a population, a portion of the cohort that are homeless. Okay,
correct.
But I think what's happening is, let's just say you've got people that are homeless that are DV victims, right? And they don't have any of those issues. You have people that are economically displaced that don't have any social issues. And then you have people that maybe have either, you know, mental health, and then the addictions, right? So my point here is, what I'm concerned about the messaging often is that the world's making a big deal out of this population, and yet, at least in Clackamas County, the numbers I've been hearing is a smaller, way smaller population than these folks. And these are the easiest people to help. Right, families, children. I mean, what, like 1,000 children? And SCSD says there are over 1,000 children that are homeless in the school district. So, you know, I put kids up here too, right? But that's part of the economic displacement. Really, it's really this. So, the continuum or the path we need. This is the easy. These are ones we're trying to do with whether it's hotel rooms, domestic violence. And that comes in all different income levels, right? Yeah, it doesn't matter. So my concern, again, is that so much emphasis is put here, but yet, I think the last number I saw was like 18% of the homeless population is this. And yet, this makes the most noise. And this is the one that we can easily treat the best, which I think the sooner we are able to intervene and help them, the cheaper it is, and the better off they're all going to be if we can address that low-hanging fruit first. But my concern, again, is the fact that we haven't, this cohort of homeless, I wish we could actually identify it in our conversation. So if we talk about that, we know what it is. And the other problem with this is that for the mental health category, for example, that's a huge problem, even if you take the homeless population out of it. It's a huge problem, and we're not focusing on that as a need or a population very much, even though it's real, right? So there are lots of people that have mental health challenges that are not homeless, and yet right now they're all being lumped together.
So I would agree and disagree a little bit. So I think that sometimes how we maybe put together our statistics matter about how what we mean about chronic persistent homelessness versus housing insecure and on someone's couch can also dilute numbers. I think often somebody in domestic violence may not be have the same drug addiction or mental issues as the person that's committing the violence against them, but they're very much adjacently affected by addiction and mental issues. Mental health and addiction almost always intersect together when they come to homelessness. So I think if this crisis in the urban areas, especially up on the West Coast, was solely just about people economically displaced, because we have like student land use policies and things like that, then we would not be dealing with the epidemic, the actual like the crisis level that we're dealing with in the Portland area and other urban cities like it. I believe that there is a lot of evidence that shows that in the major urban areas and what happens in Portland and Sonoma and some vacuum that impacts us also does have a maybe, I think, a higher number than how I mean, maybe looking at numbers slightly differently. I would still think that the driving chronic issue behind all of this ties to some level of, you know, easy access to lethal hard drugs that are prolific and everywhere, and untreated and unmitigated mental health issues. I firmly believe that. Maybe we're looking at some different types of statistical things. I don't think everybody can put into like neat categories either, because they're not mathematical equations. They're people. We're a little bit messy and wonky, and so there'd be a lot of factors that drive multiple things to be true at once when we look at that issue. But you're right. How we address our local community is important, specifically on a micro level. It's interesting. They're like, how many people are we trying to house? What's that number? And what do those different buckets of people look like? And how do we like tailor programs that meet specific needs of specific populations? How many people that are just economic in this space need this type of easy high barrier housing that can fit within this model we're doing? How many recovery centers do we need to meet the needs of the addiction and mental health crisis within the community? What kind of stabilization center do we need? Like what is the actual population numbers at which we're trying to address, solve, I think, is an important question too.
One other last thing, and that is the confusion between the continuum of care and the continuum of housing, right? And they intersect in a way, right? But they're different, right? Because like continuum of housing is, I refer to more sticks and bricks. Continuum of care, right, overlays that to some degree, but not always, right?
Yeah. Yes, I agree. Yeah.
Yeah, or dare I suggest this? So for all of those other pieces to the left, do we need a halfway like this? In other words,
yeah.
To me, you see, what I'm seeing is yes. About that last two.
That board is focused on addiction and mental health tied to housing and homelessness, right?
Right.
But I think the pathway is less complicated if someone is just economically displaced and they need some stabilized housing,
right?
And maybe need some basic supports to keep them stable and moving forward with life. That is a different outreach,
yeah,
than the more chronic difficult problem that also persists.
Okay, so we kind of need to look at it along this continuum, and then you have a kind of a map for each one. That's a plan. This is what I'm really seeing. Mark, in your military, isn't that what they need? You guys do that? Don't you kind of pick something and map it? First, I like the vision.
Well, yeah.
We
understand operational environment and our assets that we have to deal with it.
Okay.
And what are the threat capabilities?
Kind of like, yeah. So I'm wondering if we just need something like a map for each one of those different areas.
Well, it seems to me. On the domestic violence and the economic like displaced, those are, I would say, easier to handle than behavioral health and substance abuse. We have many systems, many programs. If somebody is a victim of domestic violence, H3S has got options for helping those people. And we have, we have rental assistance. We have all kinds of things going on to help the economic displaced and the domestic violence, where we're absolutely in dire need of those programs to actually affect the legal health and substance abuse, because all of our good intentions are outdone by fentanyl. Because once fentanyl is ingested, that person, rational thought and self-help becomes an impossibility. Okay? They're not able to help. So that's what we're not only Clackamas County, but Greater Portland region, state of Oregon, California, Washington, Minneapolis, Philadelphia. We're finding the nut is too hard to crack. Now, and because part of it, you know, with the domestic violence and economically displaced, we have assets to deal with that. But the challenge to deal with the substance abuse problem is not something that can be solved on drive. That's a federal source of solution for the federal office. The Golden Boys keeping out until the drugs that come in with the Thompson. And also, Measure 110, as long as Measure 110 is in effect, we will be unable to push back the tide of rising addiction.
I will say this. Yes, the supply is crazy right now because it's cheap and available and everywhere. But I think our goal as local government, our goal is to try to get it on the demand side. And that's through, you know, what we can do through recovery systems of care.
Well, exactly. I'm not saying that you shouldn't do that. That's important to do that. That's why they talk about treatment first as a the missing element in the increasing problem with homelessness and addiction, like we have in Oregon. Okay, we have to do that. Okay. So what I'm saying is, the county is where the rubber meets the road. It's not like we can turn around and defer a problem to the CPOs, for example. You know, not going to happen. So you see, all these problems that we have to deal with, I think right now the most important thing we can do is send up Red Star Cluster, signaling that we have a problem. You see what I mean? We've done that. Document here that you want us to look at today addresses that. The idea that they're saying, wait a minute now, let's put the brakes on housing first because hundreds of millions of dollars in the greater Portland area are going to that. Yet we're seeing the left end of the board up there increase with problems.
Yeah.
Okay. So.
But I'm going to be clear. I believe housing is essential and a part of it.
Can he finish?
It is, you know, but again, you know, every night in the greater Portland area, there's hundreds of safety on the street beds that go unfilled. Why? Because if people with behavioral health and substance abuse don't have the wherewithal to say, hey, you know, I'll take that. I'll get off the street tonight. That's our hundreds of millions of dollars are up against the power of that. And the power of what it does to render somebody totally incapable of making good decisions for themselves. And that's why the treatment first thing and removing Measure 110 so the judiciary could say, Mr. Jones, you're going to be directed to this facility that Clackamas County has now, and you'll be kept there for a duration of time to undergo treatment for addiction. That's what we need. Okay. 1,700 people approached by Portland offered safety on the street beds. 170 accepted. Only two people out of that 1,700 said, please give me that drug addiction treatment. Okay. That's how powerful our enemy is here, being fentanyl, drug addiction, and other forms of mental health problems.
Where I was going to go was kind of similar to what Martha just did there. You know, if it is treatment first, like you said, Mark, they're going to be in a facility, right? There'll be a roof over their heads. There'll be security. You can't treat someone who's got severe chronic problems while they're unhoused, right? So I don't buy into the housing first or treatment first. I think it's both. I really believe it's something in between, right? At the end of the day, when you talk to some of these folks that are homeless and they don't want to go in a room or hotel, is because they're worried about their belongings that they can't secure, right? Whether they're on the street. I mean, we're watching, we've seen these stories, right? We're watching the stories that are being published. We're talking to staff people who work with that population all the time, tell the stories, and they're all different. But I really like what Martha put up there. I think that really talks about it. Yeah. I was just wondering, Chair, if it's okay maybe to ask Rod or any of the staff if they could just put some rough percentages, what they think Clackamas County looks like in each of those populations. Is there anyone that can help with that?
Is that a yes or no?
If you don't have it right now.
Oh, you don't have that right now.
Especially not on the left hand side. We don't have it right now.
You know, that's a really basic question that I wish I would have known that before we even started down this path and spending, you know, all these millions of dollars on projects that may not be suitable for Clackamas County. I'm really astounded that we don't know that, but is it because it's impossible to measure? You're the experts in the field. Okay. So we asked this question, and you know, anecdotally, you could have given us a rough percentage, like 30% here, 35%, you know, just off the top of your head. But Rod, is it because it's unable to determine?
It's when we talk about how do you collect data, so it counts. It counts homeless, the level of homeless, 16%. I could say that the community analysis plan really starts to be as well as the people living above. So I can tell you 16% is the latest count, but that's how the data was collected.
Collected.
Broader question, like, you have to do that exercise. And, again, I'm not sure what you're talking about. If I'm a homeless right now, or are we talking about?
Yeah, just the homeless population. Yeah.
Rod, will you come to the table, Rod? Can everyone speak up, please? Because the air is on and the mic's not picking up, please.
Okay.
Thank you.
So I think we can get the answer. We just have to ask the right question.
Right, yeah.
And so, again, that's it. Today you were asked the question, of the homeless, how many have substance abuse? I think our last big count said 16%, the one that I saw most recently. And that's 2022. And that's because we asked that question. And so we would just have to go back out and ask the question, and I think we would get the data.
So we haven't collected data yet to answer this question. Is that what you're saying?
To answer it across the
board. Yes.
Because I could go and ask CWS to say, of the homeless population, of the total population, how many are in the DD programs? How many kids are in on this? So we can get that. We can get that data. It's just that, again, our invite to this meeting.
I know.
We don't even know necessarily what you guys were going to talk about, let alone.
Well, guess what? We don't need. Yes. So there. So. And this is the purpose of this meeting. This meeting is going as intended.
Yeah.
So don't feel, staff, like you've been put on the spot. To me, this is a very glaring deficiency that we cannot go further on spending millions and millions of dollars until we know what the population is we're trying to help. We all make assumptions. There is perception out there. We all make presumptions. But I feel like, you know, we're running in the dark. We're running in the dark. We're trying to figure out, well, is this person, almost like Paul says, their situation is different than this one, you know? What?
Well, I was going to say that the homeless plan that's in place, there was some criteria and some process that went on. I was a part of it that decided which populations, whether population A, population B. So there was some research and some data to come to a conclusion on what needs to be prioritized. And that's what was decided before my time, but it's in the plan. And that's what we've been funding and going after and trying to meet those goals. So if you're talking Metro, they absolutely think we've chosen specific populations that we have to meet certain data points to see that we've been successful in our endeavor. So it hasn't been a total shot in the dark, but this exercise here, I think it's a good exercise to do to see now that we have this population, we go deeper into of that population and what's really happening and how we provide the best services to the right population at the right time. And I think that's just part of a system being developed over time. And if I can say one other thing, if we could be honest about all of this, money drives this. And so you'll see even CWS, who were domestic violence when domestic violence was popular. That's where they got their funding source, right? And they could be domestic violence. They were proudly saying that. As soon as the housing money came about, they said, oh, wait a minute, we're housing people who are, have experienced domestic violence. So we are a housing program. So people, you know, the tail wags the dog on this system stuff all the time. I'm not telling you guys nothing you don't already know, but that's been our reality. And because HGS is very dependent on federal and state and not general fund, so the county isn't really investing in all this we're talking about. I mean, there's a small investment, but I'm saying the bigger investment is from federal and state and other localities. So it sometimes drives the agenda, where it at least drives what we say we're doing in the name of to get all those populations handled. And that's how we've had to operate from day one. So maybe that's why we're so confusing and complex with how we do it, because we grab money and we make it, we back it into our population. And that's the only way we've been able to fund it in Blackfoot County. That's just, we're not, a, you know, we don't have the tax base that, say, a Portland or Washington County has.
Yeah, I just want to just build on this a little bit, Rod. Thank you, Rod, for that. The other thing that was done in the Metro SHS process, you know, type A, type B, but we know that the population type percentages are going to be different in every county, right? I'm going to be the first to make a wager that our numbers are different than Multnomah County's numbers. I'll bet there's probably more substance abuse issues in Multnomah County homeless population than there are in the Clackamas County population. So sometimes I worry about these hard numbers and that, you know, that population A and B. But the other thing I wanted to add on this is to Chair's concern, or the way she worded it, is that our staff, you know, I've heard several times, and I'm proud of our staff for doing this. They really do a good job when they come across person. Well, I don't know if triage is the right reason, but it's almost your first one. Know your population and then figure out where they fit or if they fit with the funding available and the housing available and all that. So they're doing that job of filtering, if you will, and steering. And I think they've done a pretty good job of it. In some areas, they have a wealth of resources. In some areas, they have a deficiency of resources.
Yeah, and this is not housing, but for those who don't know, Mayor Rombaugh's director of behavioral health. And then you have Sarah Dickinson, who's the director of our clinics. Clinics has a mental health component and a behavioral health component, and then Mary's has the behavioral health. So they're the ones who typically have been triaging and creating a system to deal with these two populations outside of housing. So how, you know, blending in housing is, I kind of like your chart where, you know, there's treatment over here, and then if we do the right things, it leads to housing.
It leads to housing, from the housing, yeah.
But they're the ones who are in Clackamas County for all these decades have been handling those two populations. And so as we talk about this and we figure out how to blend it or align it so that it's all one system, because for the individual, they need holistic service, right? And so that's... Yes, because one thing alone is not going to fix it for them.
Just one quick question. Where does people with disabilities fit into this?
Say that again.
Where do people with disabilities, housing the people, is that under behavioral health?
Yeah.
Or is that under?
Yeah, that's a good one.
Yeah. Disabilities, because that's a different.
Social services, most of our disability programming is through social services.
Okay.
What was that, Rod, in here?
The DD population, that's elderly, developmentally disabled, that's usually through our social services department.
Okay.
But if I could add, I would argue that disabilities process
all the, we just said that, yeah,
have some right. We treat individuals in silos when in fact an individual with developmental disability can also struggle with substance use.
Right. Okay. That's why I figure
I think to put it like that, Commissioner Savas, but just a reminder that I do think it does. Disabilities in particular, I think touch across many.
I agree. Yeah, absolutely.
Martha, you want to continue?
Yeah, I guess because, Rod, remind me, because I think that way back when,
we had largely focused, I don't know if I'm correct or this not, on folks who have who had mental issues, mental disabilities and things of that sort. But those were the folks that we immediately, I remember Bill Kennemer talking about that. Is that true or is that just some myth in my head? I don't know. I mean, that was back in 2003, guys. So, I mean, I don't know. Yeah, but,
it's before my thing because I came out of the children's
right. side of it. Okay. And okay. Well, then never mind.
But I would share from a state funding perspective in the behavioral health system, it has always been, it's never been adequately funded across the board, but it's always been better funded on the mental health side.
Okay.
So substance use has really, they're sort of behind the times, finally catching up some. But when you look at the disparity between how much the state has invested in the public behavioral health yeah. system, it's still a pretty wide gap.
Okay.
So I think you're remembering that would be accurate, okay. that we would have been much more focused back then on mental health concerns than substance.
I remember opening units actually up here in Oregon City that were specifically for people with
And it may have coincided with the closing down of the state.
Oh, that's right. Yeah,
so they're right. bringing it back, pushing it back down to local.
Yeah.
I have a question for staff. How often do you guys, because I know you guys do a lot of
I think everybody's recovery journey is different. And I think part of the continuum is always, it's not a one, it should never be a one and done, right? And yep. So, you know, we know, and I will support.
We need to stop because the microphone has stopped.
Oh.
Sorry.
Hold that thought.
Sorry.
But Dan, these two connectors are in the field.
It's okay. I'm done.
So I'm just trying to be open.
You got it back. Thank you. Okay, you're safe.
Is it work? Is it working?
Yes.
Okay, go ahead.
Who's talking? Oh, Mary.
Yes.
Go for it.
For that, I'm not talking. So to answer Commissioner West, I think every person's journey, I think you see a lot of patients who aren't honest when you ask them how many drinks they have per week, and you sort of know their story isn't the same as yep. all of us, right, who go and have to answer that questionnaire once a year. So I think the opportunity is both, again, I want to support what Commissioner Savas said, which is we have to do both, right? We have to have stable housing, whatever that looks like. It's sometimes transitional with the goal of permanent housing. And we have to be able to offer the support services that are comprehensive enough. And this is self-directed in a lot of ways. Like we offer the continuum, it's self-directed by the individual. And folks come into recovery at various points, right? Sometimes they hit rock bottom and that's what gets them there. So we get to know our this community, and we really try to meet them where they're at. And we really don't, our goal is to not give up on them, right? Because if we do that, we're not really serving. I know I'm not serving my mission, right, to serve this community. So it's complex because people are complex. But I think we can. And I think part of my hope is really to understand, you know, what is the role of us as the county around the delivery of these services versus the role of community-based organizations, coordinated care organizations who really, they're the Medicaid health plan for many of the folks that we serve in this community. My division, I'm responsible for anyone at any given time who might experience a mental health concern, regardless of their insurance. That's different, right, than making sure that someone has access to primary care, dental, and mental health. That's an insurance responsibility. But where do we play a role as potentially a provider of services versus potentially also a funder of services as well? So I think the continuum conversation is important because what should be our scope of authority, maybe based on the funding we receive versus other types of funding such as commercial insurance, such as coordinated care organizations who are really the Medicaid health plan for folks on Oregon.
Martha, did you finish where you were headed?
I'm finished.
For now.
I'm finished where I am. For now. Yeah. I have Mark, maybe some other things.
I just want to clarify a point. Commissioner Salas mentioned that Multnomah County's got more homeless people than we do. They also have 3.5 times the population as Clarkness County does. But is it not true, Mary Rumbaugh, that I remember a couple of years ago, I think when we were talking to you, someone mentioned that Clackamas County had the highest opioid addiction per capita. Is that still essentially true?
That's not a stat that I've ever shared.
I remember a couple of years ago. I don't remember exactly where it came from. But would you agree that opioid addiction in Clackamas County is very serious?
It's serious it's serious in this county and across this country for sure. I think, you know, again, this is like the data points does the data points inform how we want to do the work? And recognizing that we say this about suicide, one death due to suicide is one too many. One death to opioid overdose is one too many. So it really sort of, it's, and I think the data might inform where we put our resources and how much, but I would argue that one death to opioids, to suicide, to alcohol, we don't talk about alcohol the way we should. People still actually die more from alcohol overdose than they do actually opioids. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah. Well, yeah. The reason I asked the question, I asked for clarification is because what you just said, if we did in fact have a higher than normal addiction problem, that would tell me that I would start looking at the two types of homelessness on the left of the board and concentrating on them. You know, and the other thing too is I don't hear that many. I know you do, Mr. Cook, and housing staff does. I hear issues about domestic violence and economic displacement. It doesn't come to my attention right now. What does come to my attention almost on a daily basis is the impact on the overall society of people who are homeless with mental health problems and homeless with addiction problems. That's what the fires are burning, from my perspective. And that's why, I agree that we need housing first. Like, I don't disagree with Martha's agreeing. That's kind of a well-accepted thing. I never have argued with that. But again, like I said earlier, the real void we have in dealing with the homelessness are those that deal with that behavioral health and the addiction problem.
And here's my bias.
Paul's next.
Yeah. So, Mary, I have a question for you. One of my concerns, I don't know the answer because I haven't seen our metrics yet on that. But so the people that, let's just say someone's having a breakdown or episode, a behavioral health problem, and they're on the street, they're homeless, and a team goes out to take care of that person and does what they can for them, and of course there's no roof over their head. That's obviously cost money. That's got a certain success ratio or not, right? And then we have the people that are maybe in, let's say the Econolodge today, right, that might have maybe a behavioral health challenge. I'm sure the answer is ours is success or higher when we know where they live, right? We know where we can find them, and we know we can make sure they're taking their meds of the day versus the other. I mean, that's a no-brainer, but do we have any numbers on that disparity maybe of success?
It's a great question. I mean, this is where we have to really sort of partner with some of our housing representatives aren't here because that's the opportunity. Because again, in my division, we'll get called to the Econolodge if there's a concern about a mental health issue, but we're not the provider of the services, right? So my data is really just the folks that are coming to our attention because through 911 or the community or the provider is calling us, and that includes folks that are houseless currently on the street. So I think there's a slice of data that would be really interesting to see. So it would take some. We are partners with our housing partners, but they're not here today to sort of help answer that question.
Right, right. And I know that we got some people that are well. Connected to that population that know them really well, and I trust their inputs. But I reason I did all of this was because I think if we're going to solve a problem, we need to have a better definition of what the problem is or who we're trying to help and treat. And having some kind of numbers in the future, rough, I get gather that, just rough numbers what those populations are and where we have resources, where we don't. But if we're going to be successful, I think we need to understand the problem before we try to fix it, right? And I think the more we know as decision makers, whether we act on something, don't act on something, has to be based on some good data and a good understanding. That's why I did that, because, again, my earliest concern, it just comes up that everyone thinks about that population to the left when the numbers of the other populations to the right are far more numerous and far far cheaper
right.
to treat.
They think of the right.
I'm sorry. Yeah. I'm sorry if I got it backwards. Yeah. The population on the left is far cheaper and more numerous than the population on the right. The last two columns are. So.
You know what? It doesn't matter what we think. I hope you guys know that.
I got a question.
It doesn't matter what we think. We can pontificate and bring facts forward. And unless the public has the buy-in, and I made the point on Monday's meeting to the tri-counties, and I said, look, bureaucrats, you think you know best, and Ted Wheeler came on and made a case to them, and I 100% agreed with Ted Wheeler. I never thought I'd ever say that in my life. Were any of you on that meeting on Monday? Most of our housing folks, and I guess the heat isn't here today, but...
Yeah, you're on that committee.
Yeah. I do a lot of work on that, by the way.
I know you're on that committee. Yep.
A lot of work. And I'm listening to the tri-counties and I'm listening to Metro. But unless we take this out to the public, I don't believe we can make informed decisions on how to move forward. And that's why I had on the agenda that Community Summit and Blue Ribbon Committee to come in and start putting this information out. Or we're going to, every single one of our business meetings is going to be packed with 300 and 400 people. And you know what? Even if we do the Veterans Village 2.0, it's not going to be like what you guys experienced last time, I can guarantee you. Because it's not going to be as easy because people, the community, the public is in such a different place right now. We have to acknowledge that. So this discussion that we're having is good as we try to move forward, but I want commissioners to keep in mind about a community summit, okay, where we said we're going to invite people in from all aspects that they want, that they're going to tell us what they think needs to be done, and then the panel Commissioner West has brought up and has said experts from outside of the area, and we need to look at this problem maybe differently than what we're currently doing. So this discussion is great. We have spent an hour on trying to dissect a problem that we're not going to solve, which is fine, but I think we need to move it along down the road to something else.
Yeah, I'm just going to respond to Commissioner Salas's comment, but the numbers on the left being far greater. I understand that one of the growing types of homelessness is senior citizens. But again, I'm not seeing anything that actually breaks down those six or seven categories into real numbers in the county so we can have some real understanding. But again, like I said, I'm not hearing anything, very little, about homelessness, seniors, or domestic violence. What I'm getting hit with all the time is the negative effects on our society of behavioral health and substance abuse, homeless. They're the ones that are really causing a lot of problems. You know, when my ride along with Lieutenant Killinger here, for example, everything we came in contact with that day was directly related to a mental health or a substance abuse thing. Yeah, there's a crime involved, but if you look at that, the mental health and the substance abuse thing was just huge. So,
and to your point, it's the perception out there. So wherever we can, Paul, take our data points, wherever those data points are, and I've learned today, I think our data points aren't clear, to what the perception of the public thinks, that's where we're going to be stuck in the middle and we're going to be in an internal war. Because we have not been married the two. We have not married public perception with the actual data points and the solution. And so that's what I'm hoping we get here today. You know, this started this fine on one aspect.
Just my brainstorm over the weekend.
Yeah. And I don't disagree with anything on here. But I think we're policy makers, okay? We are not experts. None of us is the doctor. None of us is the psychiatrist. None of us is what you guys are. That's why you're here, to help us along the way. So I'd like this discussion to go, commissioners, what do we need to do to get the public on our side? Okay, we need to get the public on our side moving forward to do this, to try to fix the situation. Martha.
So, you know, Dan Fowler, as you know, is a catalyst for all of this. And this is where it came from. It was from the Oregon City Business Alliance. They got together. So it was not all advocates. It was actual business people as well as advocates. And they are looking, as you know, to have that one-stop shop in Oregon City at the Miles Fiberglass.
It's called the Navigation Center.
Building. Right, the Navigation Center. They have very quietly gone business to business throughout that whole area. They, as the Dan Fowlers and all of those folks. And because of their, because of the fact that you've mentioned this before and I have too, because they are leaders and thought leaders, and because they saw this as a major issue, they're now rolling it out, but they're rolling it out with yeses ahead of time.
Mm-hmm.
All of those folks surrounding that area at this point are yes, 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 yes. Okay, and part of the issue we have, this is just my opinion, is that we need to leverage our political capital more as thought leaders prior to rolling out some of this. It's not staff's job to do that, because their expertise is in the delivery system. Their expertise is knowing how to do that. We have to prepare the pathway as the, for better word, politicians, to make sure we're pulling the right people at the table way ahead of the negative curve. And this is the question we must ask. The question is, what are we doing already? What do you think? How would you do it better? And here's some ideas. And then you get the community buy-in. We need to leverage. We need to give staff the room to do their work. But with recently, I didn't think it was staff's job to go to those businesses. I should have been months ahead of time knocking on their door saying, what do you think? What do you know? What do you what? Tom Ellis, he's a good friend. I love Tom. You know, and he was good. But if we had been a little bit more proactive, us, with helping to manage these larger communications, I think we would have had a different outcome. I think they'd still be grumpy. I think they'd still be, you know, whatever, but they have buy-in into the process and they have ownership in this. And we did do a housing group trying to get to that in 2018. But I was, and Paul, you went to most of those meetings. My concern was we had some of the business people there and they left because it was the usual. It's not just about our advocates who are in the field doing it. You always have to have your external heroes and champions like the Fowlers, like Lori Oland, okay, like the Shelley Perinis, like, you know, the guy down the road that, you know, has the business, the immigration lawyer. We've got to do that first, but that's our job. And I feel very frustrated because I always think the tail's wagging the dog. Okay. And I'm not blaming anybody but us about this. We have to think more proactively as a commission with our leadership leverage in these communities and get it managed in a way where we're not having Tom show up saying, what the hell is the gateway to Happy Valley? I mean, I don't know. I mean, am I frustrated?
I mean, yeah, I agree with you, Martha, 100% on that. And as Dan Fallow was rolling out that program, I knew about it. And I knew too. And I said, I wish that we would have done something similar. But honestly, I felt really pressured that we had to hurry up and spend the money.
I understand.
That we had to do it now. I felt so much pressure, my head almost exploded. Okay?
I understand.
And it forced me into taking a position, honestly, that I didn't have time to study and take into all consideration. And a project like that is too darn important to do that. And so that's what we're doing now. I mean, the Van Fella model is excellent. Is excellent.
Well, they will in April have a whole series of things now moving ahead in the larger community. So we just have to reorganize. I don't know, Tootie, if it's too late to do the blue ribbon now or not. I think we kind of crossed the Rubicon, but that's just where we are. And I'm not, it's, no, it is what it is. It is what it is.
Dan, Paul, and then Mark.
I just piggyback on what you said. I mean, we've seen some of this already shift with Neil Nedeleski.
Yeah.
And Chair Smith and I just had a meeting with him, and he has made like 180 degrees, like turnaround. And he says he's not sleeping at night. He is so passionate about trying to figure out a way that we can help people get to self-sufficiency and recovery. Yeah, in a way, before, when I first got here, he's in my office and he's mad about the Quality Inn. Mm-hmm. But now he's wanting to be.
Well, guess who else is?
Well, something other. Is this new?
No. I don't know if I'm going to name that. You know, just go with me on this. It's Terry Emmer.
Oh, yeah, he called me too.
He says, hey, I have land.
Yep.
You got money? I got the land.
Oh, yeah.
God. I'm so like a shop.
So these people like that are great, great community stakeholders to help us get to this vision, building and fostering and creating those relationships now to figure out and build something special in Clackamas County is what is tasked with us. Now, can I jump to the blue ribbon?
Yeah.
Or,
you're in the queue.
Okay. So I know we have an agenda ish.
No. Yeah. Yes, we do. And no,
but
we don't.
The blue ribbon, I guess, as far as I the Blue Ribbon Committee idea, we can also like do more than one thing at once. We can talk about a Blue Ribbon Committee idea and do it while also still implementing things now that are policy oriented that do Clackamas County things now. It's not like one or the other. We're still going to continue to serve and house people. We're still going to continue to be innovative. We're still going to try to work to do better while also getting the best thought leaders around to help inform us to do that, to even grow and expand our capacity. I guess my thoughts or ideas, I'll throw them out there on the committee, on the Blue Ribbon Committee, is potentially looks like something, because I don't know if everybody even knows what it might look like, but potentially looks like something where we have a weekend or a couple days, we bring in some local and some outside thought leaders that are wildly successful and respected in North America. We come in, we have, and we set like a basic strategic plan moving forward. And then monthly we Zoom call with some of the peoples on this committee, and then a report could be created that we could use and work off of while we are continuing to also solve the local problems mm-hmm. we're dealing with. So, I have an email proposed to the board suggestions that I think would be fantastic that are outside of the area, to help enrich our work on this issue and to make us better at it. And I think there's some good local people here too. And there's people in this room and on our staff that are essential also as we move forward in doing this. But that allows us to hear from those that aren't. Then I think that there's some, at least for me, I have some inherent skepticism. And this is not necessarily fair to staff here at Clackamas County because it's not even 90 days yet. But I do have some inherent skepticism. One, because I'm the nurse on the floor all night with the person. I'm like, is my patient in the ceilings now? Like, are we going to get shanked today by this patient? Or how many people are we warehousing in the emergency department all night on this floor? Am I going to be digging maggots out of this patient's knuckles? Like, is this patient like, you know, just, I mean, that is part of my bias. And so when I am from the Portland area and I can drive through this county and I can still see some of it come into our county. And I think it, for many of us in Clackamas County, and I think I can speak for them, is there is some level of, I don't want to say distrust, because I don't distrust you, feeling like the status quo has been persisted for so long and it has gotten so bad that whatever we are doing is not enough and we need to step outside of our own bubble in the metro area and maybe see where people are having better outcomes and see if we can help fill in some of where our gaps are on whatever care continuum we're working on building. And I think that that's what is a possibility with this committee as we also continue to look at innovative other policy ideas and work on issues. Housing first, you know, to me can be really negative if where it's been done in certain parts of Portland and the West Coast where somebody is not getting the care they need and they end up being an isolated addict instead of ODing on the concrete they OD on a hardwood floor or carpet. Housing first for a population that's a single mom that's economically displaced is a different scenario and different. The same words, different terminology and uses. I think harm reduction aspects of it are necessary to provide life-saving care, but often it is used completely outside of recovery model. And it feels more as a nurse, I've seen more palliative care for people than actually recovery care. And that's hard for me as a nurse. So I feel like that a lot of people in Clackamas County are bewildered because we have spent gobs of money. And I'm glad that everybody's urgent about it now, but it's like this didn't happen overnight and Portland doesn't look like it does, and our home doesn't look like it does overnight. So I think that's why the Blue Ribbon Committee coming from maybe some additional sources outside of our community can be beneficial to us. And I support some of those thought leaders from different parts of the region coming in.
Mm-hmm. You have. That's why it's on the list. That's why it's on one of our points.
We have three major health institutions that would be willing to be part of that.
We can pick who wants to be on that. Everybody mm-hmm. has a decision point on the yep. board. You know, Ben has his suggestions. We all might have. Your neck.
Yeah, I'm not going to speak very much about the Blue Ribbon Committee. I'm supportive of it. As you know, I kind of hatched the idea at our retreat center
yeah.
with knowing that we were on a trend progress towards acquisition of assets in order to treat all these different populations and so forth. So I'm still supportive of it, but it needs to be balanced. We need to make sure that all different experience levels and ideologies and everything just balanced. Because otherwise, it won't be respected. The outcome won't be respected. What I wanted to talk about was just building on what Martha was talking about. And Martha's going to know instantly what I'm talking about here. But I have a lot of family in Lane County. I first moved here to Lane County. Their public opinion and challenges with treating the homeless is completely different than here. They are far more acceptive of the problem solvers and the leadership in the county, regardless of political stripes or anything else. You got the city of Eugene, you got the city of Springfield, you got the county, Lane County itself, and a whole bunch of people like Dan Fowler and others, right, who are supportive. And the CBO organization, faith-based community as well. So you have all these and you know, Pat Farr, and so their model was that, okay, we broached it with a long time ago with the veterans thing, because everyone was veterans. So they did that model. It was not anywhere near as nice as ours, not anywhere near, right? It was tense. You know, matter of fact, I think the last time I was out there, they were still there. But for different reasons. But we did that. We didn't get to Tootie's point. We didn't have public acceptance. No one accepted it. Zero. And I'm not saying that it's a foregone conclusion that you're never going to get public acceptance. I think you can get leaders to say, like us, you know, other electeds to say, hey, this is a good thing. And we went out on a limb and we guaranteed to the public and the businesses nearby that if this goes bad, we'll fix it. If it goes bad, we'll shut it down. Yeah. Whatever it takes. We made that promise again here. Mm-hmm. Sure. You led the conversation at the North Clackamas Chamber Zoom meeting when you were talking about it. I was in the audience. I was there as a resource. I attended as much of that as possible. You did another one, and you did three of them, I believe, right?
Three or four.
So you were out there. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying that had we been invited, we had more of us involved, it would have been a different outcome, I don't think. But
everybody was invited.
Because I'm not making the presumption that we're, I've been in elected role since 2001. Yeah. I don't think anything where there's been complete community acceptance on anything. I don't care what it is.
Yeah, that's true.
It doesn't matter. You never get it. That doesn't mean it doesn't matter. It does matter. But we need to take the right steps. We need to know what that outreach is good, that we've done our work, put ourselves in a position where we can, you know, hear the community concerns, make sure that the concerns are addressed as we feel as best as possible, and do the best job we can to mitigate that going forward. I think that is the key thing about public involvement. And we did that. We did that when we talked about a community agreement with the neighborhood businesses. We talked about, but that was security. We talked about the operational. We talked about maybe even possibly a fence. You and I have been on the fence about the fence,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
So, you know, all these different things. So my point is that, Chair, I think we did a decent job. I don't disagree with Martha that maybe it should have been more of us than it was staff. I think it is probably more in our bailiwick for us to do it than it is staff.
I mean, I do think that we don't use our leverage enough externally as leaders, and I don't know how to fix that. I don't know. I mean, I would have talked to Tom a lot sooner, you know.
Yeah.
But there was no, you know, I didn't do it.
Well, I spoke to him as well, and I'm not going to bring any names or anyone elected in this conversation at all. But Mark and I had a couple in the last day or so little exchanges or discussion sharing, and I made the comment, Mark, that the campaign that was ran against us, the petition campaign, the online, you know, sign a petition, put your name on it. I mean, I'm sure those people are going to be listening. Some of them, no disrespect. I mean, a lot of energy, but it was a campaign. Right. But their language did not match what we said we do, what we had on the website, and what we were going to do. It was contrary to that. So I thought in a way that was inflammatory. If you're going to carry the message about something different than what we're doing, and that's what people signed up for. Hey, my family probably would have signed a petition if it was going to be built the way that they said it was going to be. Right. But that's not what we were doing. Those things happen. It doesn't matter if it's a sewer plant. It doesn't matter if it's a whatever it may be, where we're going to locate you know, even a library. We had arguments over that. Where are you going to locate a good thing like a library or a school or a prison, Wilsonville, you know, or a mental health institution, right, facility. So we never get buy-ins. What I'm trying to say, we're never going to get buy-ins.
So I do want to answer that because you mentioned I was out there. I'm not saying 100% buy-in, but our communication, I think, has been abysmal. And when I went to Gary, he says, look, we need to hire a firm to get our message out there. Because clearly, no, I didn't hear hardly anybody, except for the people who I think had a financial stake in the game, repeat or even come close to saying what we were saying on this. And that was a failure. Now, if you looked at what Shelly Perrine and Dan Fowler did, they sat down for months. And it was easier with them, I have to admit, because it was only like 3 or 4 people involved. And they were focused and they knew where they needed to end up. But how do we get there with as much buy-in as we can? Now, Dan got buy-in because he owns, he's a businessman in downtown Oregon City in this area, and he owns a lot of the properties down there. So as a businessman, he, an owner, he could go to the other owners and say, as an owner in this area, this is what I see, this is the problem, and this is what I want to do. And he immediately, practically immediately, got all of those businesses down there, not only to buy in, but they broke out their checkbook voluntarily and helped pay for what he wants to do. And it was genius. But in this situation, I think we probably should have done more. But again, I felt that we were pressured. Now, to your point, when you said I did those Zoom meetings for all the business associations, I think there were 4, if not. Staff came in this room and we met ahead of time. You know, we had a district attorney and a sheriff and a housing and a, the problem with that was it was on Zoom, number one. And I felt it was really one-sided. And the one-sided was me. I led it. And what we didn't get is we didn't get the people saying what they didn't like about it because I don't think they felt they had an opportunity to express concerns in the chat box. I mean, Neil Nadolesky put a lot of stuff in the chat box, and I'm saying to staff, do you see what's in the chat box? We're limited to an hour, and there was so much. Can we answer these questions? But unless people feel that they're heard, they have to feel like they're heard. They have to feel like that they have buy-in. And sometimes they just want to express their opinions. I was on the phone with the governor yesterday. Talked about 4 different topics. And I told her about how the community in general are pretty much wrapped up. There's a lot of anger out there directed at public officials. And then she says, oh, I know. She says, everybody comes in at Mach 10. They come in at Mach 10 and they're yelling at you. And when people are yelling at you, I mean, I'm no different and you're no different. Politicians tend to shut down. And when we had all these crowds in there, it's all I can do. No, don't even think about answering the questions. Just to get through the agenda and get people through so they feel like they had an opportunity to speak something to their elected officials. And most of them are coming in at Mach 10, directed at us that somehow we're the bad guys because we want to fix this problem. And I don't like being in that seat. So when I say, we need to go out to the community, at least so they are heard. They have an opportunity to present their ideas to us. It may not work. It may work. I think it will work. If we're going to start doing this stuff that this commission wants to on a big scale, we're going to have to start engaging in more of this stuff. You know, Paul, you made a perfect point. You said Lane County isn't anything like Clackamas County, that they're more accepting of what their local leaders wanted to do. My God, Clackamas County is just like the Wild West out there.
Yeah, I want to build on that, but go ahead.
Okay, that's a very astute observation. So people in this room should really take that home and think about how we manage our way through this. Or I guarantee you, you're always going to have a Channel 6 news person there. You're going to have people writing false innuendos in the newspaper about what some statistic is. Nobody's getting the statistics right. I can tell you that on money or anything else. And so that's my frustration, is that we've got to start being more open and listen to people. And I think Martha outlined it well. And at least there is a model that we can follow to get to where we want to go.
Yeah, but still the follow on that, part of the, I forgot to mention about Lane County is that they built on their successes. Their confidence in the community was as a result of their successes. And Emily, what was the name of that firm that interviewed us here about how we used to do our messaging with? About 2 weeks ago, you and I were in the interview.
H3S.
Right, right. The point was, what do we need to communicate? What are some perceptions, right?
Oh, and connect.
And that was, I think that would be the next step. At that time, we were on the path of purchasing the hotel and so forth. So it was a way to mitigate and deal with some of the misunderstandings and misperceptions out over there that we talked about, that I spoke about earlier. But that's how we do it. I mean, and that's why we need to, you know, we have leveraged the Veterans Village. We should leverage the hotel sheltering that we're currently doing and successful. And I did that. I took calls, but everyone who called me, that was the response. I said, I'll meet you out there. You pick a hotel. We're currently doing, I'll meet you out there and you show me what you see wrong because I don't see it. Right. And some of those people did that. So the people I talked to, I talked to a lot of them. I was able to get them from hell no to either I'm in or I'm neutral. Okay. With the exception of a couple, I won't name any names, who were just hell no.
So what you really start out, you do what you call an authority map. And that's basically like, okay, let me give you a specific example. And again, this is on us. The guy who's the head guy at Clackamas Town Center. Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah, all right. I didn't hear. I didn't know. Well, he was notified.
He was on my Zoom call.
He was in the Zoom call. I was there.
I know that. But then he's always going to say that. But what he needs is a personal call after the Zoom call and the follow up from.
First, let's knock on the
door. Yeah, we got to knock on the door, and it's not staff's job to knock on the door. I mean, I think one of our staff said, but we contacted him. We did. And I'm like, I know you did. But we have to knock on their door. We have to have coffee with them. We have to bring them to the building. We can say, if this doesn't work, what are your ideas? You're not going to get everybody.
I agree.
Okay? And we have to trust each other to do that.
But we
have to make a list of who are the movers and shakers. It's not that hard.
I don't know, Martha, if it's physically possible to go knock on every door. That's why I want to invite them in.
But that's right. But
invite
that's
them in to.
But that's what I'm saying. You invite them in, but they will not come unless they get a personal.
Well, that's all right.
A personal invitation from the leadership to say, we want you. We need your help to solve this problem. That's what you did with Neil. You traveled with Neil, didn't you?
Yeah. Yeah. It was life changing for him, and it was amazing. I jump in on that. The thing with the business community is they felt it was already a done deal and we were just selling it to him.
Yeah.
So then they were in their haunches already. That was no longer collaborative, right? So you can have all those Zoom meetings you want with these people. They're now in a full, like, we're defending our position mode and you defend your, and now we're just talking at each other. There was no collaboration really happening. They said over and over again, this is already a done deal, isn't it? This is a done deal, isn't it? This is a firm informality now. We can't. And so I think that you're correct. And I think that what happened was is when Neil got into my office and within 15 minutes, he was booking his flight to Canada with me. Mm-hmm. And it changed his whole life and perspective.
I would agree. So when I say that on these Zoom meetings, it was presented and we didn't get the, I think it was the wrong format. And I think it was the wrong.
Well, now we can do more personal work.
The doors are open, though, right now to build these relationships.
The doors are open, and I think we could always prepare this. I'm just saying, moving forward, it's going to be up to us to do this in a much more strategic way. There are five of us. We each have people that will listen to us.
And we all got to be on the same page, too.
Yes.
Yes.
Do you
have a comment?
Yes.
I'm sorry.
Okay. In defense of the efforts that were made to go out to the public, on the quality app, which staff worked on. We got to remember that it was one November staff brought the idea of the quality into us. It's kind of a short fuse. Hey, we got this offer. Then we did property negotiations until 12 December. It wasn't until the 13th that we actually went out to the public to notify the public that we're looking at quality in. And then that was a sort of Christmas time, and we really didn't get any blowback or comments from the public until around the 7th of January when people were back from the holidays. And then on 1 February, we had the draft plan we voted on, and then 16 February, the vote to purchase. So that was a very calm, compressed timeline to do this.
Yeah.
And so that's why, you know, I think, I went out and talked to people at Titanus Tennis. Yeah. Unfortunately, I missed Dennis Curtis. But so that's the problem. Public involvement takes time and effort. If you take away one of those two, you're going to have serious problems. And on the blue ribbon panel idea, I think it's not too late for it. It's never too late for transparency and public input. And if we do it right with a cross section of people from all walks of life, rich, poor, left, right, up, down, and we can come up with public input on it and a spirit of compromise with as many people as possible feeling like they had input to it, then maybe we can have a plan to go ahead in the future without having a great deal of animosity and blowback in the county. Like I said, effort and time, the more you have of each, the better the outcome will be on public input.
You know what? Been through a lot of controversial neighborhood pushback, not in my backyard kind of public involvement efforts. And it's always wise to do an after action, whether you're successful or you're not successful, mm-hmm. to do an after action. But I'm going to go back to the point about what public involvement primarily is for, is to find out what their concerns are.
Mm-hmm.
And I was listening. Mm-hmm. I heard people that said, hey, I'm all for what you're doing. I like your plan. I don't like the place. Well, that's NIMBYism, right? I get that. I mean, I'm not that that's a criticism, but that's not in my backyard. There's never going to be probably the right backyard, right? Someone's going to be anti on that. And the other element, maybe there's not enough of, or they don't understand it, right? And so forth. But that after action, successful or not, is something you learn from. And I literally made that a point with the Veterans Village that we can learn from this, knowing we were going to be successful with it, and we overcame all of that. But I'm not going to spend much more time, on this. We know we need a lot more assets, dollars, and structures and places. And no, I don't care what it is we want to build, but I don't think that counting on the NIMBYism aspect of buy-in is going to be something that we can overcome until they learn that and have the compass like Lane County that, by the way, it worked out really well.
Okay. So thank you. Commissioners, I want to take a break, and then I want us to come back and see what next steps are. So let's take a comfort break. Breathe deep. I think we've had a good conversation up here. I think we just like barely scratched the surface on some of these issues, but I want to come back and take more time to figure out where we're going to go. And, one of the issues is really easy. So how much time do you want? 10 minutes, 15, I don't know. Okay, so 20 after? 20 after, we'll be back.
We can go.
Discussions, and we can talk about whatever you want to talk about for as long as you want to talk. But I do want to try to accomplish some points of action today. And the easiest point of action, why don't we just discuss at a policy meeting the possible referral of Measure 110 to the voters. We can either do that in August for the August election or the November election. And we can discuss that because that does satisfy a certain sector of the population. Okay. Yeah. When I've been down at the legislature, legislators tell me, man, we've got to do something with 110, but they're not doing anything with 110.
Right. Yeah.
Maybe they need a pressure from a local community. I think Ted Wheeler is in agreement on this.
Oh, he is.
He is. He is. But maybe Clackamas County needs to be able to refer the question to the voters that says, should the legislature overturn Measure 110? And then there's a subtitle that the attorneys can draw up, and then we have our reasons for doing so. So I will, if you ask, if it's okay with everybody, I'll bring that forward for further discussion that we can take an entire policy session to do that.
Oh. Yeah, let's get our legislative staff to find out what's going on with the bill. I know I heard it on the news that there is some momentum on some kind of bill that is going to tweak 110.
Okay.
So I don't know what those tweaks are, but yeah. I heard that yesterday.
Okay.
So yep. let's see if our Gary, we can find out more about that.
They can only do so much because it's a voter passed initiative.
Yeah, I know, which means
so you just need to, I don't know how much you're going to, I mean, if you still tweak it, it still stings like poo. So.
Well, not. I learned something about legislation that I didn't know from a contract attorney that now is a legislator. If on a voter passed initiative, if the legislature participates in any way in that, the legislature then has the authority to make as many tweaks as they want to. Hmm. And he gave me an example, and that's vote by mail. So all under the assumption that, well, vote by mail passed by the citizens and only the citizens that can overturn it. And so we had this big, long constitutional discussion on it. The legislature intervened several times on vote by mail, right? Change times, change postmarks. So that was an opportunity for the legislature to do whatever they needed. So I don't know, Paul, if previously the legislature has convened on Measure 110, but if they on when it was referred, but if they do this, that is a whole door opening that our referral makes sense there. And I hope they are, because then that'll give us a gateway in there. Okay. So that's good to know, Paul. And so we're just, well, I'm just going to like cross that off. We can discuss that easier. Because to me, that is a, could be fairly easy. All right. If you would like to discuss the formation of the Blue Ribbon Committee, and Paul had a good point at break, he says, in this discussion of their ideas, we need to bring forth a list of our assets and our tools that we have currently available to work on this problem. And a lot of that is dollars. Okay. Because like Rod said, this is being fueled by the source of the dollars.
Yeah. So just to build on that, the analogy that I, or my call it analogy, I said, it's like, it, you know, the, if we go on to this venture, I'm using the analogy of a picnic. We're going to go on a picnic. We know that we need food. We can argue about what we want to eat at the picnic, and we can argue about where we want to go for the picnic itself. We can all agree we need picnic baskets, right, to get there. So the assets, whether they're programmatic, whether they're dollars, whether they're buildings, whether they're places and so forth, we still need to work on all that because we know we need the picnic baskets in order to go on this journey.
Okay. That's one item on this blue ribbon. I'm also going to recommend that each of us bring a list of who we want on it. And by list, I don't necessarily mean names of Sue Smith or Patty Jones. What I mean is a person who is maybe a doctor or a psychologist or somebody who has done this before or this community person or this business person. We all have in mind who we want to be on this. I have a couple people in mind. I know you have a list. Martha, you brought up the medical folks. That's very good.
Yeah, you need to get the medical.
Yeah, and then once we compile this list and identify who those people might be, and then each commissioner can call and ask for
right
whom they want on there. That's what I'm thinking. Any other suggestions?
So if I could. Gary, I'm going to ask you, what would be the best way to go about this? I know that when I talked to some doctorates, PhDs, you know, they have their circle of people and they know where they are on whatever the topic may be, right? So I want to make sure that we're not just sourcing people from us. I think publicly, frankly, the more people we don't source from us, the more credible it may be by some. So I want to make sure that we really look at this with a very open mind and we actually bring in, and again, balance. I want to make sure that whatever it is perceived as best we can, but there's we've done this before, the county, on other topics. I don't know if you have any knowledge or memory or a go-to person for how to help structure and manage this and screen this. Any ideas?
Yes, we've done this before at the county on different task force, like MAP-IT, and we have a prior housing task force, and there's several people at the county, employees, who can help. I would suggest that you work with your policy advisor, what the chair just recommended, a list of names or categories of people or expertise you like on the committee. I'll talk with staff who had experience before. We'll put a draft charter together for you. I would recommend, chair, a policy session on this as well. Once we've collected all your names, a proposed charter, and then you could formalize it at a policy session. We'll put all this information together. Yes.
Jump in.
Yeah.
Doctors, there are some of the best addiction doctors in the world are at OHSU.
Okay.
And so I think that's a good outreach. Dr. Tangaray out of Canada is a great person too. But we might have a connection to OHSU. I know the doctor out of Stanford, Dr. Oh my gosh, she's on the, there's a list of like five or so people that I recommended. But there are some local, amazing, actual professional thought leaders on this issue that are not even connected to the county, but we just happen to have them in our own backyard. Okay. So that's some thoughts there.
Why don't you bring your list forward?
Okay.
So I have a vague list in my head.
So I'm thinking out loud here now. One of our issues is our continuum of care. Should this be our continuum of care group? That it has external people who will come and help guide this discussion?
Yeah. So overall strategic plan, and then to the point to where like this is like some actual like where your overall like whatever my where I don't know where my little thing went, but like whatever your continuum of care is as you want to address and solve the issue. So like I wrote out a continuum of care, but like let's say, and this is just super loosey, it's a little loosey goosey, but yeah, this would be like, this is where we're strong, this is where we're weak, this is where you guys could be visionary, this is where we did it here, and you could do it better than us, even if you did X, Y, and Z, because you've already done this model. And so, yeah, I think it would get to like physical, like visionary, like these are physical assets, along with, you know, what is the overall mission. So both.
I'm talking about what Pat did. I mean, our continuum of care right now, remember the governor said it isn't. We don't.
So if I could say something before you continue.
Yeah, go ahead.
We're trying to identify people to serve on our, quote, continuum of care. We have identified positions, but I don't think we have bodies yet, correct?
Okay.
Not quite yet.
Okay. That's we're working on that? Okay. That's right. Okay.
Okay. Continue. Martha.
Okay.
Continue.
Okay, so that's all I was going to suggest. Are we going to recreate something, or are we going to substitute something that hasn't been working as well for us as it has
been? It has not been working as well, and I believe Adam Brown identified that.
Okay.
And he said we need a continuum of care, because early on the governor told me in January when she declared the emergency order, this will allow your continuum of care organizations to go out and collect federal dollars. I'm going, I said, okay, fine. In reality, there was a huge disconnect for me because I didn't know what they did. So also in her emergency order, the MAP group, also she wants a continuum of care there. And the pushback from Clackamas County was, can it be both? Can't we have one group that serves as both? Why do we have to be recreating everything for you, Governor, when we're already doing it here and we're getting the same pushback from Multnomah and Washington County by the way? So we're working on the continuum of care organization.
All right. And this Blue Ribbon Committee is different than that continuum of care, because some of the people that you have on this Blue Ribbon Committee
would never be on a continuum of care.
Correct.
Right. They'd be more local, right?
More local.
Yes.
Okay, you're thinking about getting non-local people as experts.
Oh, yeah.
To set forth our overall strategic plan going forward, and also to inform us on all the different ways in which they've solved this crisis and maybe how we can do it better than they did it.
Okay. Just look at the NACO resources. They got them all there. They got all the people.
Well, why don't you reach out?
That might be a source, too. That'd be a source.
Martha, that's your deal.
That's my deal. There you go. Okay. All right.
Martha.
Look at the people who might participate in the blue panel. We also were thinking about what is a mission statement we're going to give the panel. What is their function? what are they being brought together to achieve.
Yep.
So they have a clear understanding of what the output is supposed to be from the panel. And then with that output, then we can assess that and then look at our continuing care, how that's going to work in.
I think if anybody wants to start writing it, go ahead.
So I want to build on that. The other thing I was thinking about is that when we evaluate the folks, ideally they share their successes. So they've got a resume of their successes and models that work, and then we can do some research on those as well. But I would want to make sure that I don't want to just be talked at. I always respect people who've done it, walked it, lived it, and have a model where, hey, this is what we did, and have that experience level, and also have the educational background, you know, that they were part of that. So proven models are, I think, is what we need here. I think that's something that will get more buy-in from the community at large, that they know that, hey, they did this in Arizona, they did this over here in this part of the country or whatnot.
I think that will be, well, that's my same goal. I think that will be how it is. I hope that's how it's done. I don't know. It's not my decision.
And maybe with your contacts in Lane County, there's somebody that can come up and serve on this for us and help us.
The Brothers program that we talked about, or Brothers in Lane County.
Oh, that, yeah. Someone brought that up.
I think we talked about it. Yeah, one of these conversations we had.
Right, right.
Yeah.
And do we want to include county business leaders in this Blue Ribbon panel?
I think a couple.
I have a couple in mind, too.
Yeah.
Well, I think we ought to keep co-opting Dan Fowler, for sure.
Yeah. And, you know, let's not ignore, for instance, Neil and Terry on this either.
Yeah.
Because they can bring assets.
Yeah.
And they have a lot of know-how.
Mm-hmm.
So that's who I would ask.
So okay. I think that might work for the continuum. The Blue Ribbon, I think, needs to be external. So we're talking about two different committees, right?
No.
I mean,
The Blue Ribbon would have some local input. And even these, like the guys I'm recommending that I put on my list that are from Alberta, Canada, that created the Alberta model, that's amazing. Yeah, that me and Neil went to. I think it is. Neil already is ahead of the game on what this looks like. And these guys are like, is Neil going to be there? Like, I think that's something that Neil is important to have on a couple business guys. We need to decide how big we want it to be. And then kind of, you know, we can make it, you know, to where we have too big. I think that there are some definite like stakeholders that are leaders in this issue, but I think a couple like local people that understand Clackamas County are invested here would be good too. I do think
we have to have local something.
Yeah.
It gives us buy-in.
Yeah. Yeah.
And how big are we thinking? What is, when you brought this forward, what was,
well, I think I submitted when I gave my synopsis of the trip to Canada to the board, and I wrote, I don't know, that 1200 or 1500 word email to you guys. In that email I did put, I think I put 5 or 7 names there. I know that the doctor from Stanford had recent surgery. He's not available, but Dr. Tangaray is.
So I would want the Blue Ribbon Commission to be bigger.
Yeah, but that's just what but it could be 15 people, and yeah. I have, okay, you know, 5 to 7 that I've recommended.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then all people we recommend may not be able to come either.
True.
Yeah, and then sometimes you pay for their flight to come out here as well, by the way.
Yeah, and I was going to ask Gary on that, the funding for this. Are we able to use opioid dollars?
If the work of the panel involves mental drug treatment and mental health treatment, if it's, we can make it fit. There has
yeah,
to,
I well, totally we'll discuss that and make it fit.
Okay.
So one thing we didn't get a chance to today, maybe we talk about it next or soon, is that while we know, I'm throwing myself in this as well, so just being humble for a moment, while us talking heads are doing what we're doing, it'd be nice to get some idea of staff's world, where they're at, how they see things, and how the supportive housing services dollars plan and the metro plans and some of the restrictions and things that they're working under, where they need more resources. I think it'd be valuable because they're doing the work right now, every day, yesterday, today, tomorrow, they're doing the work. But we haven't heard from them in a long time to understand what that level of work is. So I don't want to dismiss that. And I don't want to give the impression we're going to be sitting back talking about it because our staff are out there doing it every day. And I think we need to message them. it can't just be the message out there that we're going to sit, because that's part of the public message out there right now. We're just sitting around. We're going to talk about it for another 2 or 3 months while, and it's, there's more to it than that.
So Paul, why don't you and with staff, with our staff here, try to identify who that other staff would be, and that's what
yours could be. Sure, I'll work with
Everett.
Yeah, Everett and Emily on that.
Yeah, okay, and then you do your contacts.
Yeah.
Martha does NACO. What do you want to do?
As we're talking here, I'm concerned that we were in a panel. I've not come across to the people of the county as a group that's making recommendations without input from people in the county. I'd like to see some people from across the county who are just maybe local business people, or perhaps somebody on the CPO, just so that there is an element of Clackamas County cross-section of our people also having input to this fluid panel. Because if we go back out and present the result to the county, and the people don't feel like, you know, they had some of their own flesh and blood involved, that might be more difficult for
us. I look at it as being two different groups. A totally holistic citizens, and those can be business people, right? They can be medical people. And then we combine them. We take the input from both, and we somehow balance it and measure it and go forward. I think because the citizens panel, the residents panel, could be huge. It could be like 50 to 75 people that come in. I want to invite them in to be able to not come in at us at Mox Pen screaming and yelling, but to be very thoughtful and say, hey, I want to enlist their ideas. You know, they say we're against this, we're against this, we're against this, but we need to solve the homeless problem. So, Joe Citizen, how do you want us to do that?
Yeah, I think it's important because
it's important, but maybe not for the Blue Ribbon Convention.
Okay, well, somehow when it comes together for us to assess the input from both the Blue Ribbon Commission and from a cross section of the people, we can balance it all. You know, on the quality end, the one of the big blowbacks was you didn't involve us. You didn't know about it until the last second. And that's what gets people upset. If they can learn, you know, if they can exchange ideas and feel like they are a part of the final decision on how we're going to move forward, hopefully that blowback will be reduced and be more consensus.
That's what I want to do with the Citizens Commission. But we also, for the Blue Ribbon Commission, we need people who've done this before that are thinking outside the Oregon model. And what I think about the Oregon model is we're somewhat programmed that we only do it this way. And there are other ways. And that's why the Blue Ribbon Commission is important.
Well, you could say that's a West Coast model, too.
Because there you go.
You know, from Vancouver, BC to Los Angeles, it's the same model.
I'll just speak to it is actually called the Alberta model. You could Google it. The shadow minister to drug and addiction services in Canada's chief of staff, Sheldon Bailey's on my list. Dr. Tangray, the leading addiction doctor out of Canada, is on my list. They're more than willing also, like if they're coming as outside sources, they're more than willing to come in and do a conference call with me. Be like, okay, great. We're more than happy to participate, you guys. Here's what we see a structure doing. Here's somewhere how we created our strategic plan. At the end of the day, here is your strategic plan and your physical attainable goals, which is different than like citizenry input and buy-in. But that doesn't mean people that fit the build as expert people on this issue wouldn't ever not be local. OHSU doctors are local. Neil Medaleski is local. Maybe somebody from Father's Heart is a part of this locally, right? Like, it doesn't mean that we don't have other local experts. I believe that this panel is a commission is to give overall vision, direction, and a layout for this county to move forward to recreate the wheel that doesn't exist in Oregon or much on the West Coast. Then the citizen input is about, is a separate issue of just about an ability to have like a town hall type of environment for the citizen to talk to us. We did it over the airport, right? As I was being sworn in as a city councilor in Wilsonville, packed the whole room out. People gave their testimony up and down about what they thought about the runway end. Or where that you guys were probably a part of it. I think the county chimed in on that. Yeah, you were newly elected. And so similar like that, but for housing and homeless, how people want to address the issue in Clackamas County.
That's what I put.
So it's two separate maybe things.
Yeah, but they have to agree they're not going to come flying in at Mach 10 and start screaming and yelling because
hard to control again. Yeah.
Nobody listens to that.
Well, we didn't work on the airport.
Yeah. Huh?
It was pretty. It was packed, and we did it for the airport.
I know, but it was civil.
Yeah. It was civil. Yeah, it was civil. Totally.
People need to be civil.
So one last thing, I got to go here pretty soon. Sure. One other thing I wanted to just mention is that I think we need to be respectful that there are a lot of groups and organizations and models that are working on the West Coast. Not enough of them. I'll be the first to admit that, right? But there are, and I think that. Especially the fact that if I consider them, those that are working well, I consider them assets to the community, assets to the cause. And I don't want to alienate them and say everything we're doing is wrong or have the perception that what we're saying, that everything that's happening here is all wrong. We need something. We need to throw the baby out with the bathwater, right? In my world where I came from, I had people always arguing their ideology about you do it this way in racing or you do it with this kind of a this or this kind of a that. And I thought there were brilliant ideas in all of it. And it was about taking all the good ideas out and good models and using that as a step to go forward. And I think we have to be cognizant of that. It's not all one way here.
No. I don't think anybody thinks it's.
It's not all bad.
So, Gary, do we have enough direction to go forward with at least a couple of things? Generally saying yes.
For now, yes. So, commissioners.
Want to do a conference call with those guys?
Please give your input to your policy advisor on names. Types of charter for this group, what you see is the purpose, the mission. Send that to your policy advisor. I will work with the policy advisors. We'll come back to you at a policy session to tie it all together to finalize.
Okay. Emily, can we? Are you done? Go ahead. So we're adjourned. Thank you very much.
Okay.
Let's see what's going on.
1 second. Let's turn off the. We're done. Tony?